This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Mike and Scott. This story is from our episode about nuclear experiments. In October of 1947, George Earle IV, a Navy reserve pilot, was ordered to fly secret missions and to drop cargo over the Atlantic Ocean. He didn't know what he was dumping, but each mission went exactly the same way. George would go to an airfield at the Philadelphia Navy Yard. At the time, the Navy Yard was a massive facility where warships and planes were built and repaired. George later said that when he would arrive, military personnel would swarm all over with Geiger counters to measure radiation. They would hover their instruments over large 55-gallon drums, listening for clicks. And they would do the same thing to George, too. After the men took their readings, the drums would be loaded onto the plane, a plane George would fly late at night, low and slow, to not disturb the canisters, until he was 100 miles southeast of Atlantic City in New Jersey, over the ocean. Finally, a crew on board would open the hatch and tip the canisters into the sea. George said he flew three of these missions. The whole operation was very hush-hush. He knew that the cargo was radioactive in nature, but he never learned exactly what he had dumped over the ocean, despite trying to find out. It remained a mystery until after his death. A recently rediscovered collection of papers sheds some light on what was in those barrels. Grant Hill has more.
George Earle IV has been dead for many years now, and his son, George Earle V, didn't know about these flights for a while. At the time they happened, in 1947, the memories of World War II were still fresh for the elder George, though he didn't like to talk about his service. He had been a bomber pilot in the South Pacific.
But every Sunday night, we'd watch Victory at Sea.
Father and son would watch documentaries about the war together, always in silence.
We'd sit there for an hour, and Dad would just be in tears, seeing his friends being killed. He was the only original pilot alive at the end of the war, out of his whole squadron.
After the war, his father became a test pilot for the Navy Reserve, and this is when the flights to the ocean happened.
He was assigned to take these canisters out and dump them off of Atlantic City.
And anything related to these flights was classified, a word George Earle IV understood very well. He came from a storied patriotic family. His father had been the former governor of Pennsylvania, who earned the Navy Cross after the family yacht was commandeered to spy on the Germans. So, the pilot did as he was told and kept his mouth shut. He didn't tell anyone about these flights, not even his son. But over the years, the mystery and his conscience ate away at him. When he retired from a career in marketing, he moved to a snowy small town in Vermont, where he had a lot of time to think.
After a drink or two, you'd start thinking, well, geez, I remember I did it. Nothing ever came of that. I wonder what the deal is with that. And then start writing letters.
George says his father wrote to the Navy and several federal agencies asking about the flights. What was in those canisters? And whatever it was, could it be harmful? Some of the federal agencies responded. The EPA said it was aware of low-level radioactive waste dumped by ships in that area over the years, waste created by the government and commercial nuclear reactors. One official said close to 30,000 barrels worth were dumped near that site. None of it proved to be harmful. But they never heard of planes dropping canisters out there. The Navy stayed silent.
They wouldn't reply to him or even acknowledge that this even happened.
It didn't sit well.
Dad had a personality. You really didn't want to piss him off.
In 1981, he went to the media with his story. This is the first time his son ever heard about the flights and the dumped cargo.
I knew he wasn't making it up.
George Sr. told a reporter, "I've got a conscience, and this has worried me these 33 years. Government officials took the claim seriously, but yet again, the Navy said it didn't know what he was talking about. The thing that bothered me was never getting a response, the elder George said. I don't trust our government anymore. It just hushes everything up. George Earl IV died in May 1992 without ever finding out what exactly he had dumped into the ocean, and without knowing that the answers to his questions had all been carefully collected, though they wouldn't see the light of day for years to come. The year before the pilot died, in 1991, a man named J. Hartley Bowen Jr. donated a collection of papers to the Science History Institute in Philadelphia, papers from his time as a supervising chemist with the Navy.
The collection itself, I think it's about 2 linear feet.
That's Patrick Shea, the archivist at the Institute. The Institute's entire archive, if you were to line up all of the boxes, spans about 1 mile in length. That's how Patrick measures it. Every so often, Patrick likes to pull out a couple of feet at a time, sit down and sift through it. A few months ago, that's exactly what he did with the 2 feet donated by J. Hartley Bowen.
I just pulled it off the shelf to determine what was in there to get a better understanding of the collection. Opened up folders, looked through pages, but it was just the contents of the collection which really caught my attention.
It revealed the answers to George Earl IV's questions, a formally classified story, one that started very publicly.
5 seconds to go, and...
In July 1946, the Navy exploded 2 nuclear bombs in Bikini Lagoon in the Marshall Islands, part of something called Operation Crossroads.
This document here is talked during Operation Crossroads, numerous types of naval aircraft were exposed to atomic bomb blasts to determine the relationship between blast damage and distance from the center of explosion.
The donated materials in Patrick's archives didn't include any film reels, but there's a good chance you've seen footage of the blasts.
One of the most dramatic scenes from the entire age of nuclear testing.
This is Keith Parsons, a historian who co-authored a book about nuclear weapons testing.
I think Godzilla 2014 had it in the beginning. I think Dr. Strangelove had it. What you see is instant.
The Navy's top brass were counting on the blasts to make a big splash. They had seen how World War II ended, with 2 large radioactive bangs. And there was concern from Navy officials that this new type of warfare could render its fleet and its massive budget useless.
There was the question of, if we can destroy a city with one bomb, couldn't we destroy the mightiest fleet with one bomb? So naval personnel began to come up with this idea of testing it on a fleet of ships to see what happened.
Who knows? Maybe the knowledge gained from bombing ships today could help fortify fleets tomorrow. Scientists from the Manhattan Project warned against the experiments.
Well, we already know the best protection against a nuclear weapon. Don't be there when it goes off.
Many thought this proposed Operation Crossroads was little more than a lobbying effort, a catastrophically dangerous one.
There was much cynicism about it at the time. People were deeply skeptical, but the Navy got its way.
Politically, the tests were perhaps a global demonstration of might to show the world exactly what America's newest weapons were capable of. So, in July 1946, the Navy parked dozens of decommissioned boats and ships and planes in the lagoon, filled them with equipment and animals.
Goats and, pigs and sheep, mice and whatnot.
They shuttled hundreds of journalists and diplomats a few miles away, all to bear witness to an environmental disaster.
The raging might of searing flame, crushing force, and deadly radioactive water is seen falling in a killing mist as the great circular wall of sea closes in on the guinea pig fleet.
It was more a demonstration of incompetence than anything else.
The first bomb missed its target and looked meager to onlookers in the daylight.
Someone described the awesome sound of the atomic explosion as sounding kind of like a discreet belch. And that was it, burp.
The second bomb, detonated beneath the water a few weeks later, created a thick radioactive mist that exposed crew and civilians to harmful radiation. Little was learned. The animals burned, ships sank. Still, the Navy took notes, made measurements, and crews tried to decontaminate what remained of the ships and the planes, scrubbing and washing with various cleaners, even coffee grounds. It was a futile effort.
They then needed to do scientific research to figure out what were the effects.
This is Science History Institute archivist Patrick Shea again. The Navy decided to study the effects of radiation in more depth, and over time.
As part of this Operation Crossroads, they took one of the planes that was on the deck of an aircraft carrier.
A TBM-3E Avenger, a Navy bomber.
They boxed it up and shipped it to Philadelphia, to the Naval Yard.
The logistics of moving this contaminated plane were complicated. The materials Patrick was looking through, collected by J. Hartley Bowen, they detailed all of this. By the time the plane arrived at the Philadelphia Navy Yard, it had been over a year since it had been bombed. Staff at the Navy Yard had prepared a location to examine the plane, a small spray painting shop that had been retrofitted with new toilets, washstands with clocks overhead, but no open windows.
They were concerned with any types of openings in the building because the birds could then get mixed up with the radioactive waste.
This is where the plane was broken down and tested.
So they were taking all the dials out of the cockpit and seeing if the dials still worked. They were pulling the cushioning out of the seats to see if that had been affected.
And the chemist who had collected the info, J. Hartley Bowen, was documenting it all. And he wasn't just concerned with the plane.
Personal health and safety issues. It appears quite often.
Over and over.
Throughout this material. They want to make sure that the safety of the people and the equipment as well.
One of the project's objectives was to figure out the best way to train personnel to handle stuff exposed to radiation. To, quote, develop methods for the decontamination of radiologically active aircraft. So, in a way, the crew doing all those tests on the plane, they were subjects too. On the frontier of radiological safety education, or guinea pigs, perhaps. They attended classes, were shown educational films, regularly had their blood drawn, their clothing and protective gear photographed, and all of it was documented.
They said, look, when we provide uniforms to the workers, make sure there's no pockets. Because if they have pockets, they'll bring cigarettes, they'll bring food, they'll bring things that they're going to put in their mouth, and we can't allow them to do that. So it wasn't that the workers were afraid, it's that the workers didn't know any better, and they needed to be protected because it was the scientists who understood just how dangerous this actually was.
Still, there were some surprises even to supervisors like Bowen. According to his handwritten logs, some articles of clothing worn by the crew quickly became just too contaminated to wash and reuse.
This laundry issue is something that keeps popping up, right? They're noticing that the workers' gloves at the end of the day are getting contaminated, and there's really nothing that they can do to decontaminate them. Gloves found in excess of tolerance placed in drums for disposal at sea.
There, written in pen on faded graph paper, confirmation of George Earl IV's claims.
Monday, October 20th, when they dropped 6 barrels of contaminated waste at sea from B-17, location approximately 100 miles east of Atlantic City. And this is an actual photograph of a 55-gallon drum being loaded onto an airplane.
Along with these daily logs, the photos, the now declassified reports Bowen donated, there was something else. Newspaper articles from 1981, cut out by hand.
George Earl IV, 64, said the canisters were dumped from a B-17 bomber flying low over the ocean, 100 nautical miles south-southwest of Atlantic City, on 3 flights in October 1947.
The article was written after the frustrated pilot went to the media about his mysterious missions.
He described the operation as very hush-hush and said the plane was checked for radiation contamination after each flight.
Some of the sentences bracketed in pen.
This material was included with the collection, so Bowen would have seen these and said, oh, yeah, we were definitely doing that.
So Bowen cut these,
yeah,
these articles
Yeah, he cut
out.
Them out, and he put them with this material. So he's the one who put all this material together. So it's not like we're saying, oh, maybe it's no. Bowen knew that. He's like, yeah, he probably remembered George Earl. He was the one giving him orders to do all this. He made the clippings, and then he put it together with this material.
J. Hartley Bowen Jr. died in 1999, 18 years after those news stories were published, 7 years after George Earl IV's death. He could have confirmed the pilot's story, or let him know what was in those barrels, but he didn't. Bowen knew that what George Earl IV disposed of at sea was not quite as dangerous as the pilot feared, or, at the very least, less so than the countless other barrels buried at the same site. Bowen did not explain why he stayed silent, or why he saved all of the materials and then donated them to a science museum. His son couldn't be reached for comment, so we likely will never fully understand Bowen's motivations. Either way, he chose to stay mum on the topic, but quietly tucked all of the evidence away in boxes to be discovered decades later.
That story was reported by Grant Hill.